A jail stint can really disrupt someone's life. You can lose a job, a relationship, or thousands of dollars on fees, fines, and bail.
Have I ever gone to jail? Yeah, I just got out, actually.
If he doesn't show up to court, you gotta pay the $50,000.
No ring exchange, no kiss the bride. There's no glamour in a jailhouse wedding.
Off the Block. All six episodes tracing the path from city block to jail block and back are now available on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You know, I have a life outside of the show, and I occasionally write for people, and the piece I wrote for the inaugural issue of GQ Style was a look at the sensibility and philosophies of one of my favorite menswear retailers, and I think Design Minds, Style Minds around. His name is Sid Mashburn, and he's sitting across from me because he just opened a store here in Brentwood. First of all, Sid, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Elvis. Always great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. And I guess the thing I would ask you is, why menswear now? Because it's kind of almost inescapable in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. When we started, our store was 2007, and it really hadn't kind of...
Well, that's when I met you.
Yeah, it hadn't caught fire yet. And what, interestingly, today you could say there's more interest in menswear than there is in womenswear to some degree. And so part of it is I think a little bit of the manic nature of guys who like to dig and become not just users, but, you know, avid, ardent, like knowledgeable people about what it is they're getting into, whether it's cars or music or cigars or, you know, wines or making beer. And in a funny sense, I think that the clothing business for guys is kind of part of that group of things where guys are really getting into it and want to know about fabrics. They want to know about cuts. They want to know where it's made, how it's made. Is it a Goodyear welt? Is it a Blake stitch? I mean, you find more knowledgeable guys on the internet than I've ever seen, than even retailers themselves. So it's kind of fun to watch that. So I don't know really why, but it's fun to be a part of it.
Because as you said, I think the thing that really this is about is information in search of sensibility. I mean, because you can acquire all these facts about things, but finally people still are kind of, so guys especially, are pretty sort of insecure about what they should be wearing.
Completely. As are, you know, women get the credit for being thought of to be the more stylish gender, but they have the same issues that guys do. Like, what do I wear to work? And I'd say back in the 80s and really, you know, with the casualization of the workforce, you saw everybody kind of going, what does that mean? How do I not wear this same uniform that I've been wearing? And they might have been bored by the uniform, but at least they knew what it was. So they didn't have to think about it the night before they went to work. So anyway, you see that guys today, I think you make a super point. How'd you say that? Information in search of a sensibility? That is spot on, because a lot of these guys online that are speaking about clothes, they have the head knowledge, but not necessarily the real experience. And I'd say even the heart knowledge. They got the heart knowledge because they're into it. But the practical experience of really doing it, they may not know as much about. And also the people who would really confer that information in the past was your local retailer or a tailor. And there's not as many of them around that are as knowledgeable as they used to be.
Yeah. I mean, you came up out of that kind of retail background where – that was the kind of store that probably almost every city had at least one haberdashery that you could go to.
Even small towns.
Absolutely. You buy your one suit a year, and yep, they knew you, and that's your background.
That's exactly right. And it's funny because even in Jackson, Mississippi, so my first job in a clothing store, I was 15. I worked in Pearl, Mississippi, so it really wasn't. It was kind of a suburb of Jackson.
The idea of a suburb of Jackson. Yeah, I'm from Hattiesburg, my family, so I know when you say suburb of Jackson, that's a really touching and politic way to put it.
Yes, I guess Oak Grove would be I think Oak Grove is even bigger than Hattiesburg today, though. But what's funny is I worked in a men's clothing store with these two guys, Rick Busick and Jack Torrance. They were natty dressers, and I was always impressed by, you know, just the way they looked and how they carried themselves, and interestingly, how they interacted with people. because that's the real secret of the independent specialty store and the local haberdasher or local retailer. But there were probably six, you know, Jackson at that time may have had 250,000 people. There were probably six quality menswear stores that I could buy something from all of them. Today, there may be two. Okay. And I think Jackson's even in good shape compared to a lot of cities where some of those are not going away. And we look at, you know, these small towns where, you know, the menswear store was a little bit like the barbershop can be. You know, it's where everybody met. It was a little bit like the Chamber of Commerce and, you know, the unofficial town council. If they weren't the town council, they thought they were the town council. But those places just don't exist. I mean, that was, I guess, the original third place.
And that's the kind of place you built with the, we can say, flagship store, your first store in Atlanta. Because when I came in fact, it's where I met Will Weld. You introduced me to him.
Because, I forgot about that.
Yeah, because it's just that kind of place where people would come and just spend time. And the idea was to get to know the place and to get to know the people who worked there so you didn't feel like you were being – because the thing that guys will react to, I think, more than women is the idea of being pressured into buying something.
I'm that way. Are you that way too?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I'm a, you know, a tireless tire kicker. You know, I like to go in and look, and I don't, you know, I like a little bit of help if I want it, but really don't bother me. And we have a local celebrity in Atlanta who's a very, very, very popular pop star around the world. And when he comes in, he doesn't speak with anyone.
Is that true?
Nicest, gentlest, coolest guy. But he doesn't really want to interact. He just kind of wants to walk around and do his thing.
What was it like the first time he came into the store? Were you playing one of his records?
No, and we don't play his music very often. We have before, but he just, you know what? It was I was complimented. I mean, I'm like, gosh, this is cool. So and so's in here, and he hung out for. I mean, he's probably there for 35 minutes by himself. And he'd go and he'd take a call, you know, and then go back to shopping. And one time he put on a particularly dope outfit. We had these orange trousers, really great orange, like really kind of hot. And he wanted them cut off into shorts. And back then we had a camo shirt. It was a popover. And then he wanted a pair of Wallabies. And he walked out in that outfit. I'm like, that's cool. We would not have put that together. We had all the pieces. We had the ingredients of a great meal, and he made it into a great meal. So anyway.
But that's interesting because so many things are coming to mind now. First of all, we're talking about being a tire kicker. So I'm sure you get the kind of guys, because I'm this guy too, who will come in and look at a suit and try it on and then come back a couple weeks later and try it on again just to see if I feel the same way about it.
For sure. And then we actually have a lot of guys that will go other places because they look at our suits and they see a bunch of young guys and they think, oh, the price points may be approachable or good. And then they turn it over and they're like, oh, this is not cheap. It's not crazy expensive. Or it's certainly not inexpensive, but it's also when you start shopping around, you realize what a value it is. But we have guys that will go to three or four other stores in town and look, and then they will come back and they'll pull the trigger.
Well, one of the things that we talked about in the piece, and I, because you mentioned this before, and I thought it was really interesting, that you have like the low sort of point of entry, which is the pair of white Levi's, which
yes.
is so utilitarian. Because the thing I said to you and didn't make it into the piece was that they still have the weight of jeans. When you put them on, you feel like it's a casual thing, even though they can dress up or dress down.
In your head and in your heart, you're wearing jeans. And what's funny is we've taken jeans. We actually took Levi's white jeans, and we've started dyeing them ourselves in colors. And
because I asked you, were those orange pants a pair of dyed Levi's?
No, it was another pair of dyed. Actually, no. So we bought the fabric that way. But we like to dye them because it gives us our exclusive piece. And then also, I like that you can put a color into jeans and they're not quite as precious as they might be in a pair of trousers or slacks or pants or whatever you call them. So when we did a pair of pink jeans, guys loved them. They sold out super quick. They're like, this is cool because I don't feel like I'm wearing pink pants. I'm wearing pink jeans. So the idea of the five pocket and in a heavier weight fabric gave it a little more machismo. You know, in a sense. And guys didn't express it that way. Maybe I'm making too much of it. But it's funny because now jeans are five pockets are really kind of in most guys' wardrobes. And you throw a jacket on top of it, they're like a pair of pants. And I think what guys are saying when they want to wear those is I'm looking for something that's manageable so I don't have to either dry clean it or I don't have to press it. So there's another thing working when guys buy a pair of jeans. It's not just, oh, it's a good price point and they're cool or they're jeans. There's a something that's a little more utilitarian in the approach. So
it's a treatment. For the first time on the show, you probably heard the words machismo and pink jeans. My guest talking about them is Sid Mashburn, who has stores in Atlanta and D.C. and now here in Los Angeles and Brentwood. But we're talking about people trying on those suits. And I remember the first time I tried on a jacket, the thing that gets you finally is just the weight of the jacket, the balance of the jacket. And that's something you've worked very hard to make sure that it has just the right feel, haven't you?
Yeah, for sure. Our master tailor is a guy named Quang Dao, 77 years old. When I first met him, and he truly, Elvis, no joke, he was a gift from God. And he called me on the phone because I'd given my card to a local alteration shop. And he said, "Hi, I'm looking for Side Mashburn." And I immediately knew who it was. I didn't know it was Quang Dao, but I knew it was a tailor. I said, "Hi, this is Side. How can I help you?" And so I met him, and I thought I was interviewing him. I didn't realize that it was a judo move on his part. He was totally interviewing me. And so what was really beautiful about Dao is because he is, you know, at that time he was late 60s, is that he had been through the era that we so prize, which was the 60s, because we like the look of the 60s of something slimish that traces the body, but it's not overly opinionated, but it definitely has a look to it. And it's also not too tight. It's
not constricting.
Not constricting, exactly. And so he'd been through that. So I told him what we were looking for, and he was able to do that. And our other goal is, Elvis, because we have an open-air tailor shop in every store. And we, you know, basically, I think we stole that from Spago, Wolfgang Puck. But, you know, the idea of bringing the makers out and celebrating.
By that, you mean,
them,
of course, Wolfgang Puck popularized the idea of having the pizza oven in the center of the restaurant so people could see the food being made.
Exactly. Thank you for making that clear. That's exactly right. Because to us, you know, the makers are really the most interesting part of what we do. And so when you walk in, you see the tailors, and the guys would walk in at first and see our stores, and they go, "Oh, these guys are, you know, tall and skinny, and their pants are maybe a little short, and their clothes are a little close to the body. I don't know about this place." And then they'd see the tailors, and then they'd go, They would blink, and they'd go, "Something else is afoot here." And so we built our business partly on doing outside alterations. So that became, you know, if you're the CFO, you probably could have put the tailor shop on the marketing and advertising line, you know, as opposed to the, you know, cost of goods sold line. But anyway, we wanted to celebrate that. And so Dao's real brilliance, besides being able to interpret what I was looking for, was also building a jacket that fits a lot of different guys, you know, because you got all sorts of body types. And plus with, you know, what had been going on in menswear, there was a real shift. And I would maybe credit Tom Brown really with making guys' antennas go boing, you know, because not that guys were going to wear that, but when they saw that, they're like, you know, "Did I miss a chapter? Or did I go to sleep for a little while?" And so I think that guys got a little bit more tuned back to clothes again. And of course, their wives were going, "Oh, you need some slimmer jeans, or you need, you know, you can't wear that old stuff anymore." And usually there was somebody else maybe goading the guy to do something about his wardrobe. So anyway.
But that's interesting, because the thing that Tom did was he actually, it was the first real break with what people have been wearing in this century, really.
Yeah. Yeah. It really was a difference maker. And, you know, what's funny is we kind of dress like that already, because I've kind of always worn that same idea. But I was working for Lands' End at the time when it came out, and it was just so refreshing to see him doing that, and also to stand there and do it, not to do it and then go, "Uh-oh, well, I got to change it because the customers aren't rushing to us," and maybe they were rushing to him. I don't know about the business model, but it was a bold stand to say that and continue to say that for a little while.
It's funny, because one of the things you're talking about, too, is just the idea of having a tailor in the shop. And you lived in New York for a while. And for a while, the model of especially men's stores was that idea of going to places like you used to see on the Upper East Side. You'd go in and people wouldn't pay attention to you, not because you wanted to be left alone, because they didn't have time for you.
Right.
And it was an intimidation by either you buy this or not, we don't care. And I'm sure you saw your share of those kinds of places in New York.
That would not work in Hattiesburg, would it?
or Detroit or any number of places, but it worked in New York. And again, I feel like what was probably something that happened even in New York before the 80s was the idea of service, the idea of, listen, we'll pay attention to you because we want you to be happy so you come back.
Right, right, right. Well, listen, you know what's funny? Lately I've been thinking a lot about service because we prize service. And when Ann, my wife, and I met, she was working for Polly Mellon at Vogue, and I was working for Robert Lighton at British Khaki. And so in a funny sense, our crossroads or convergence was design and style, and we loved that. And that's why I went to New York, is to become a designer. But over the years, as I, you know, her friend is, that was working at Vogue left Vogue to go work for J. Crew and then invited me. And that's where I became the first menswear designer back in 85. And what was nice is you saw that service was a critical piece of what they did. And they had actually built their call center down in Lynchburg, Virginia, because people down there were friendly. And I'd grew up, you know, my grandparents had these dry goods stores in Mississippi. And I, you know what, it was always, touching people was always important to me. You know, connecting and sharing was always a super big, big part of my life. And I think that's one reason I liked working in a men's store early on. But what Ann and I really learned in having our own store, because it's easy to kind of think that way when you're working for somebody else, but you're not, it's not as ingrained until you really have to practice what you preach on a daily basis, and you're the one standing in the gap there. And so early on, we realized that the experience of the store, of trying to invite someone into our home, is essentially what we're doing. The style piece is still huge. The quality, you know, I was a guy from Mississippi with not a lot of shekels, but I liked nice stuff. And so it was my goal. And even the early days of J. Crew, we always used the best fabrics, the best trims. Everywhere I went, it's like, let's use the best ingredients and then try to get the best out of the make so we don't have to charge crazy prices. So value became a huge, you know, quality and value are really, you know, first cousins, siblings of what we do. So as I continue to think about it and look at other industries, we probably benchmark most with hospitality, hotels, lodging, food. And, you know, arguably one of the greatest guys out there is Danny Meyer. And if you look at, you know, you look at the Zagat guide, remember the burgundy one, that, you know, and at one time I can remember, I think he may have had 3 restaurants in the top 5. And it wasn't all about the food. You know, food was an important part, but the service, the experience, the quality, the value, I mean, all of that. So, you know, I think in a strange way, that may be what's most missing in retail today is the minestrone of all those things.
Because it's going to be for you and for people who come, and I can say to somebody who, whenever I'm in Atlanta, I would go, that you can get this stuff anywhere. So there's got to be a compelling reason to want to come to the place where you have such great pieces, by the way.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. Well, we we want to make it different enough so it's ours, but not so different that it's weird. We want, you know, it's just like right now we started, I don't know if you've heard about it, we started a radio show. And
I have heard about this.
Yeah, the disc jockey's horrible, but the music's really good. And so what we do, though, is the music mix always has to touch somebody, you know. And we're trying to have as big a hug as possible. And so it's really important for us. I mean, right now we're doing a Halloween show. And so we've done some theme shows recently, but it's easy to get, and like one show was space, and it's easy to get weird with space. You can go way out there quickly, but like, how do you dial it back, you know, so everybody can appreciate it? Because that's the other thing. When we wrote the narrative of our shops, Elvis, we said, no demographic. We said, I want young guys, I want old guys, I want black guys, I want white guys, I want Jew, Gentile, Democrat, Republican. We don't draw any lines. And we even said when we went to Washington, it's like, we're going to erase the aisle up in Washington, you know. And so how do we be a galvanizer of people? And that has to do with your price points. You have to have accessible price points, and that's why we have the Levi's jeans for $65 a pair and, you know, tree-torn sneakers and even Clark's Desert boots, because we want things that young guys and guys that don't have a lot of dough but have a lot of style. You know, because oftentimes the guys with the most style don't have the most dough. So
I work in public radio. We have to take a break. My guest is egalitarian and self-proclaimed lousy disc jockey Sid Mashburn. He's the owner of the Sid Mashburn stores here in Atlanta and D.C. and, of course, here in Los Angeles. We'll take a break. It's a treatment. There's more to come.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Check out KCRW's all-news channel, News 24. Programming from KCRW, NPR, the BBC, and more 24 hours a day. Go to kcrw.com/news24, or you can listen on KCRW's app.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm not with Side Mashburn, but with Sid Mashburn of the Sid Mashburn Stores. If you saw the piece I wrote in the first issue of GQ Style, Sid's the guy I talked to. I was thrilled to get a chance to do that because finally, though, all the things we've talked about, it's about the clothes. And I told you one of the things I was really both impressed by and moved by was that you have a jacket, the Virgil, which is named after Virgil Tibbs. And I've always thought of Sidney, another Sid, Sidney Poitier, as being a style icon who never got his due. You hear people talk about Cary Grant or Steve McQueen, and I think that Poitier is certainly ranks up there with those guys.
For sure. I mean, and you know, the other one was To Sir With Love. Oh, man. You know, massively quiet power. You know, just a walking power. And those clothes, my brother, who was 10 plus years older than me, maybe 12 years older than me, and he wasn't a big guy. He had cystic fibrosis, so he's small, but he wore his clothes tight. He had similar style. And so I'd say the other one was Dick Van Dyke. I loved the way he wore clothes.
Basically a lean silhouette, though, is what you're talking about.
Always a lean silhouette and guys that could carry it well. So also I liked Dick Van Dyke as an actor, too. I thought his range was fantastic. So it's funny because we really do, you know, in those days you really did your style or entertainment people were style icons. And I'm not sure it's that way today. What do you think about that? Do you think
I think they're more like entrepreneurs than actual style icons. They're trying to sell things they're wearing rather than and also too, you get a sense from some of these people that they're wearing clothes that people picked for them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We see that quite a bit. And listen, I could never do that.
No?
I want to wear what I pick. I don't want to, you know, I don't want somebody picking my clothes for me. Although, and I will say that I'm sometimes go, oh no, I'd never, you know, let women decide what I'm going to wear. But of course, who do I ask when I'm getting ready to go somewhere? You know, hey, Ann, how's this look?
So, this is a question I actually want to ask you that I didn't get a chance to ask you when we were doing the piece. How have your daughters influenced the way you deal with menswear now? Because you've got five daughters.
Yes.
And several of them are in working in the company with you.
That's right. Well, they don't influence me really in the clothes, but they do influence me in how I behave and how I come across and how I, you know, act in the workspace.
In what way?
In the sense that the relationship and our relationships in our company are pretty personal because you spend a lot of time each day with people. But what can happen is it can be a purely business relationship with my daughter, and I forget that she's my daughter because we're going over something that requires, you know, really a pure business judgment. It's just like, you know, she doesn't really say this, but you can hear her not saying, Dad, I'm your daughter. You know, you don't have to be that cut and dry about this, or can you, you know, back off a little bit? But it's definitely a family affair at Mashburn LLC, because Ann really drives, you know, besides, you know, overseeing the design and merchandising of her stores, and she has a fantastic team, particularly the girl that heads our product development, Lan Tran Ta, who's outstanding. But Anne also oversees all the creative output. So she and Elizabeth, our oldest daughter, really are the ones who drive that. And then we have Louisa, who's worked in the store, Daisy, who works on customer service for the website or e-commerce, And Harriet, which works on the product team, and Pauline works in the store. So it's kind of all Mashburn's hands on deck. And what's funny is they all love working in the company. I mean, not a one of them goes, ah, I don't want to go to work. They're like, we want to go to work. And it reminds me of what some friends of mine have asked me before. Like on Saturdays, they go, do you have to work this Saturday? I say, no, but I get to, you know, because it's an awesome, I mean, Saturdays in a clothing store, it's about as good as it gets.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, because friends are coming in, the cash register's ringing, there's a little bit of ease in the air, and the tailor shop is popping. I mean, it really is, it's a fun time. It's not dissimilar to the holidays, you know, because a little bit of commerce makes everybody, you know, a little bit lighter on their feet. And also, you look up and it's, you know, 3 o'clock, you're like, shoot, I didn't even grab lunch. So being in a store is a little bit intoxicating, particularly when it's busy. When it's not busy, it's a little bit, you know, thumb twiddling. But anyway, sorry to go off on the girls.
I asked you a question about that, and you were answering it. You're very gracious about it. Let me ask you this, though, because when you open your store in Atlanta, there also weren't a lot of choices there either. I mean, basically, guys were still dressing as if, you know, they were still going to go out with Charles Barkley for the night. A lot of five-button suits and
yes,
quadruple pleated pants.
Yeah, the quadruple pleat was still around.
No, you can, and you can still buy the most – I'm sure you can still find a pair of pink gaiters somewhere in Atlanta. And now you have to look very hard to do it.
That's right. That's right. Well, we when we first went there, you know, it was a very – either audacious town dress wise or very conservative, and you didn't have to go too far to find both. So there was not a lot of middle ground, and so that's what we were kind of plowing was that the middle ground. But there's still some of that around, Elvis.
There's still some of it around. I'm sure there's still more of that than not.
Yeah,
you identify Atlanta as a place because, finally, I think what people respond to is a point of view.
Yeah, that's true.
And the store has a point of view. And it's almost you treat the place, in addition to the hospitality aspect that you're talking about, it's kind of like it's your magazine.
It kind of is, because with the, you know, one of the things we do is when you walk in the door, you know, one of the things we have, we built a book called Our Culture Kit, and it's important because at a certain point we got so big, the oral tradition couldn't continue in a super effective way. So we wanted to get it down on paper. And, you know, one of the quotes in there is hug them with your eyes, because when someone walks in the door, you want them to know that you're acknowledging. You may not be able to get to them right then, but you want to acknowledge them, say, hey, nice to have you, want Coke or water, make yourself at home. Because you may be working with two more people. So it's really, if it's a magazine, it's kind of a lifestyle magazine.
Because there are, artifacts, there is stereo equipment. I mean, there are all kinds of pieces. So you want to make an environment, in the way I think of it, the Esquire magazine of the 70s, the 60s and 70s being that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That was powerful back then. And it was. And what's nice is culturally it spanned quite a bit of range too. And that's one thing that's really nice is...
Because you also sell music in the store as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not just a place to come and look for a jacket or a pair of shoes.
That's right. That's right. And what's funny about the music piece and how integral it is to what we do is I can remember one day on a Saturday, there was a kid coming out of the dressing room, you know, sleeves of tattoos, and he's getting his Levi's tapered. And out of the other dressing room is a guy that was, you know, the head of Piedmont Driving Club, which is, you know, probably one of the most... I don't even know how you'd characterize it, but a private club in Atlanta that's pretty powerful. And he was a big guy in a law firm. And they both, you could tell in the split seconds of sizing up relationships like we all do, you could tell they were kind of like, what are you doing in here? You know, looking at each other. And then you could almost see in their eyes like, that's cool. That guy's totally legit. And the older guy's going, that guy's cool, you know. So you could see this thing going on. And before the end of them getting fitted by the tailors, they were talking about guitars. You know, the guy from PDC was a guitar player. And so the other guy was a roadie. And so it's fun to see the cross-cultural. You know, that, I mean, as much as anything of us, that's what we want to be. We want to be a place where we can really bring people together. I mean, that's as important to us as selling clothes. And if we think if we do that well, that we'll sell plenty of clothes.
Well, you sell them to me. My guess is Sid Mashburn is the treatment. I'm wearing a shirt from 2007.
Yeah, that was an early one. And it still looks good.
Yes. I wonder where I got it from. Oh, Sid Mashburn. Yeah. And the jacket I just got.
The Motka jacket. That's a hand-woven fabric.
Tell them about this jacket I'm wearing, Sid.
Well, we have long been a big fan of Indian fabrics, particularly because they still do some hand weaving over there, and you get a lot of character out of things like that. And that's 100% silk, that jacket. And it's called Motka, and it's a particular weave. And what's nice also is you get this sort of high-low to the fabric, both in texture and also in color, because you might have a nice size slub, and just the way the light plays off the slub might change it. And then also, interestingly, the dye stuffs are not always totally stable on hand-woven fabric that comes from India. So you may see some patches of color that have moved around, and in a weird way.
Or that you may have left behind on a white sofa.
It could have. But, you know, we don't want to leave it behind on somebody's sofa, but we like when it moves around because it's a little bit more of the character and the story of the jacket. It's kind of the same way with jeans. We don't sell any jeans that are pre-processed. So we're not looking for holes or...
Pre-processed, you mean the things that basically are worn and basically washed 1,000 times. They look like they're old jeans.
That's right. And have one of the big characterizations is whiskers.
Yes.
You know, the creases or the wrinkling of the, you know, around your crotch area. That sort of stuff we don't like because it means it's not our jeans. We want jeans that are our jeans that tell our story. And so same thing with jackets. Our jackets are all made with either no canvas or a full canvas so that the jacket is we're loath to fusing or gluing or engineered coats because we like the canvas to break down according to your body. So really that jacket becomes your jacket, kind of the way a pair of jeans can become your jeans.
And you also don't get the pucker that you get from a glue jacket. Mm-hmm. And also it's just your body heat actually sort of gives it the form of your body.
It's exactly right, Elvis, and it's cool. We like that.
But one of the things I'd mentioned and noticed, because it's been a while since I've been to the shop, is that you don't have any black suits in there.
Guess what?
Surprise me.
Guess what? Elvis?
Because I just will.
2016.
Do you mean this very year?
This very year, we have a black Shetland sport coat and we have a black suit on the way. Besides a tuxedo, we have the tuxedo.
Right.
But for the first time ever, we did it. And funny enough, Will Welch had made, we made him a beautiful black suit.
I just saw him
suit.
Wearing the suit in New York last week.
It's cool,
it broke my heart. Where'd you get, that's not a suit.
He went off road. And we followed him.
Now, how often does that kind of thing happen before we get back to the black suit? Because you also will do tailoring. Somebody will come in and say, I want this, and you'll do that for them.
Well, we'll usually draw the line if it's something that's we don't really approve of and say, well, we can make that for you, but we won't put our label in it.
Has that happened?
Yes. And
oh my God, you just got really politic. I'm like,
Well, it's, but we don't want to, you know, as Anne said so eloquently, she's like, what I like about the way you're doing this, and it's easy for me because my name's on the door. So my latitude is 360 degrees. So I can do anything. The other guys feel a little more self-conscious as to what they can do. But she says, you know what? I like that you prescribe and don't dictate. You know, our job is to help guys, you know, sort of navigate the uncertainties of their wardrobe, not to tell them, you got to wear this. And so, you know, a guy comes in and sees my pants and sees they're a little short. I don't like a break on my pants because I like a clean line. And he's like, I want pants just like you. And I can remember one guy in particular, pretty powerful guy in Atlanta, really funny, smart, really nice guy, said, I want pants just like yours. And I was like, no, you don't. And he said, oh, yes, I do. And I said, no, you really don't. And he said, yes, I do. And his wife and his children are right there. And she's, you know, anyway, she's not rolling her eyes, but you can feel
close to it.
Something like that. Anyway,
not literally rolling her eyes, but figuratively. Yeah,
exactly. So about 3 months later, she came in the store and I said, how are so-and-so's pants? She says, he hasn't worn them once. Because it was too much. And the idea is if you want that look, we will dial you into that look. We will not circuit breaker you into the look. You know, so if he's a guy who wears a full break, we're like, we're just going to soften the break. And I will jump in with guys oftentimes that want a full break and go, let me just, you know, we'll fix it for you. No problem. But let me show you. And so I'll show a guy and say, do you like seeing a bunch of wrinkles down there or just maybe one wrinkle? And he goes, Okay, that's the other thing is guys are looking for confidence. Women, I don't mean this as a broad brush, but women are typically looking for beauty, to feel pretty, and guys are looking to feel cool and confident. So Anne said that. She's like, one of the funnest things about what she does is help women feel beautiful.
Well, I'm looking to feel pretty. That's why I'm wearing this jacket. But the black suit, I mean, because that's like you said, like a hard fashion thing, the black suit. And
yes.
You know, the thing you have in common for a long time with Tom Brown, who's done the show actually, is he doesn't make a black suit.
Yeah. Well, this is as close to a black suit as we have really put on the floor, which is a dark, dark charcoal gray. And we like it because the black suit says something. It says a little bit like I'm fashion or I'm a little funereal or I'm it's something super formal. And we're not really those guys unless it's a tuxedo or a piece of formal wear. But we have guys that are there that don't really want to be fashion, don't want to be funereal or don't, you know, and they just want a black suit. And so we've softened a little bit and said, you know what, we're going to do a black suit. And so we did it out of some English piece goods that are a little crunchy and kind
of. You showed me the fabric when I was there.
It's fantastic. And this suit that I'm wearing today is a super dark charcoal gray from England, and it's a two-ply wool. And what's beautiful about it is it doesn't. Because a lot of particularly flatter fabrics, flatter colors like a flat navy or flat black or flat gray will show shine quicker, okay, because particularly in stress spots with like your knees or your elbows. And that's the other thing nice about what we call a heather, and the heather means – or the I'm not great on my fashion dictionary, but the way we refer to it is if it's heathered, it's kind of the way – when there's movement of color, kind of like your hair a little bit, sort of salt and pepper a little bit. Okay, so there's movement in the color. It's not just a flat color. Okay, and most people's hair has a little bit because there's highs and lows to someone's hair color. And what that does is it gives you, and on your jacket there, that's a flat color, but there's so much texture in the coat that the light plays off of it differently. So what it does is it makes the color a little more versatile, okay, and also softens the look a little bit. So this does not look quite as powerful as a black suit can look.
Yeah, because I would say the thing that you really are against is kind of a philosophical bent is rigidity.
Yes, because we're never going to be perfect. But we try. We shoot for the sun. Hope we hit the moon. So.
Well, we're out of time. My guess, who almost became Icarus there with that last metaphor, is Sid Mashburn.
My wings have melted before, so.
Who's a friend and has a terrific line of clothes. You can now get them here in Los Angeles. There's also e-commerce, and the site is?
SidMashburn.com for the men's and AnnMashburn.com for the women's. Hopefully we can bring the women's tour out to California, too.
I just want to get a black suit. Recording engineer here at KCRW also mixes the show is Cat Yours, edited by Blake Vibe, who's associate producer. I still don't have a black suit from Sid Mashburn. It's the treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to KCRW.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.